This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. And you know, you can listen to The Takeaway anytime by subscribing to our podcast. You can find that on our website, thetakeaway.org, or on iTunes. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful?
I just don't know what to think about it right now. Used to see other boys fish in the backyard in their boat and go over and talk about gardening and stuff like that. Nothing political, nothing religious.
They are apparently nothing like Boy Scouts down in North Carolina, as a 14-page indictment describes a homegrown group of jihadists traveling, recruiting, terrorist merit badges, or global threats. It's a question on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Terrorism in North Carolina. It's the big story this morning, Wednesday, July 29th. I'm John Hockenberry. Amy Holmes is with us all week, former Senate speechwriter, well-known political analyst. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
I guess we're going to have your boss, Senator Bill Frist, former Senator Bill Frist, going to be with us a little later this hour.
From the Capitol Dome right here to Soho, New York.
On The Takeaway this hour, it's an economic story, but it tastes great. Steak you can buy at Costco. It's a sign of the economic recession. But first, joining us now from North Carolina, Dave DeWitt, Raleigh Bureau Chief, reporter for North Carolina Public Radio. Which is it, Dave, as North Carolinians wake up this morning to this story of seven people indicted, arrested, charged in this 14-page indictment on a alleged terrorist network in North Carolina? Is it Boy Scouts? Is it merit badges? Or is it a real threat?
It's a real threat. I don't think anybody's laying it out as being something that's not a real threat. People are concerned if any of the allegations are true, which are in the 14-page indictment you mentioned. Then people are really concerned. They're also very confused and curious at this point. They're not sure what to think and whom to believe, but people are taking it very seriously.
Well, we'll go over all the details with you in just a moment. Everything you need to know first this morning. In the headlines, we've just talked about the president's visit to North Carolina to talk health care. After his town hall there, the president heads to Virginia. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed a revised $85 billion state budget that he describes as containing the good, the bad, and the ugly, a movie title. But Democrats are denouncing cuts made by Schwarzenegger in welfare programs. Amy?
And overseas, Defense Secretary Robert Gates is in Iraq's Kurdish region today. Gates is looking at how Iraq manages its political settlement between the Kurds and the two other main groups, the Shia and the Sunni.
The U.S. Coast Guard says the search for dozens of Haitian migrants still missing after their handmade sailboat sank in the Caribbean. It resumes this morning. 100 people have been rescued so far. Heat wave continues to hit the Pacific Northwest. Yesterday, temperatures got up to 106 in Portland, Oregon. Forecasters expect more records to be broken in the region today. Abroad again, Nigeria's president says militants blamed for the violence that's left at least 140 dead in the country's north will be hunted down and punished. That's after a third night of fighting between the government and a radical Islamist group. Markets were mostly flat yesterday. The Dow opens today at 90.97. The S&P starts trading at 980. And the NASDAQ begins at 1976. So, former speechwriter for Bill Frist, huh?
When he was Senate Majority Leader between 2003 and 2006.
I wonder which is a more tense situation, being his, like, surgical assistant or being his speechwriter, because he is a doctor.
Well, I don't actually have to see the blood.
That's right. There we go. Or maybe there's more blood in the Senate. You never know. Anyway, we're talking health care today with Amy Holmes and all of you. We want your advice. What can Obama do to get health care passed? And what's the price tag you would suggest for it? $1.5 trillion, $2 trillion, 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
This is Amy Holmes in All Week here with John Hockenberry. So, John, I'm sure you saw the shocking headlines out of North Carolina. Daniel Boyd, 39 years old, drywall installer, former football player, son of a Marine, and it looks like he might be guilty of terror charges.
Well, let's continue now with Dave DeWitt, Raleigh Bureau Chief, reporter for North Carolina Public Radio. Review the bidding a little bit. 14-page indictment. We've already talked about that. Seven people arrested. This group is alleged to have amassed a sophisticated arsenal, practices military tactics in rural North Carolina, and has traveled to Gaza, Israel, Jordan, and Kosovo. What are people in the community around where these arrests took place, Dave, thinking this morning?
Well, it's still pretty new. You know, these things all came out Monday. Was sort of a raid on these seven individuals, all in different parts of town. And people are now just starting to sort of get the facts together. You know, you do see some of the jumping to conclusions, and unfortunately, to sort of take the Muslim community here in Raleigh and put them all in the same boat. And that's the Muslim community here is very active. It's about 6,000 strong in the Raleigh area. And they've gotten out in front of this and said, look, you know, we don't know what the situation is here. We know these people. We don't know them well. You know, please don't paint us all with the same brush. We're all different folks.
Let's listen to Jihad Shawa of the Muslim American Society Freedom Raleigh chapter speaking at a news conference there in North Carolina, expressing some of those sentiments you just referred to.
There are 60,000 Muslims in North Carolina. Let's just look at it from a good point of view that few people, whether they are innocent or guilty, that doesn't mean it has to hit the Muslims community here and Islam, too.
But Dave DeWitt, as a North Carolina Public Radio reporter, there are Muslim connections in this indictment among the people who were arrested. Could you outline those for us?
Yeah. You know, the ringleader is supposedly Daniel Boyd. He's 39 years old, and he's got a very interesting history we can talk about in a little bit. But the other men are all pretty much younger. And so the allegations are that Daniel Boyd was the ringleader and that these younger men had become disenchanted in their own lives and somewhat disenchanted with the Muslim faith as it's practiced in some of the more moderate mosques here in Raleigh, and that they had formed this group. And Daniel Boyd and his family, two of the arrested people are sons of his, broke from the Islamic Center here in Raleigh about a year ago and started having prayer services at his house. And so this group formed, and the wife of Daniel Boyd now has come out, Sabrina Boyd, and she says, well, it's just these trips they took overseas, these things, they were just to get in touch with their Islamic faith and to go on some trips and understand what countries that are predominantly Islam and how they work. Obviously, the U.S. government sees it a little bit differently. They've got some evidence. They haven't really laid out much of it,
right.
Some of it in the indictment. So,
and there's apparently one suspect we don't know that possibly is still at large. Dave,
right.
You know, as I'm looking at these details here, and, you know, maybe I'm totally out of line here, but it seems as though the Boyd family has adopted a curious amalgam of North Carolina kind of camping mentality, military mentality, and then thrown in this sort of Muslim element here. It's a curiously familiar and unfamiliar mix.
Yeah, North Carolina is an interesting place for a lot of reasons, but one of those is, you know, this is a state with a very strong military background. You know, Fort Bragg, Camp Lejeune are here. It's a very rural area. The places where Daniel Boyd lives is a county that's very rural near Raleigh, Johnston County, and they supposedly did some training exercises in a different part of the county. Or a different part of the state, pardon me, Caswell County. And, of course, the international headquarters for Blackwater is also here in North Carolina.
Interesting
stuff. So you see a state that's very militaristic, very pro-gun, but you also have a very strong sort of other side, if you will, a sort of a liberal bent to certain metropolitan areas. So it's a state that's changing a lot. And many people that I've talked to in the federal government, the FBI, said, in a way, it's a breeding ground for some of these kinds of activities because of that sort of pro-military background.
Well, more details from the federal authorities as well as more reaction from North Carolina will be following it. Dave DeWitt, Raleigh Bureau Chief and reporter for North Carolina Public Radio. Fantastic. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
So let's take a step back, John, and look at how Daniel Boyd fits into the bigger picture of international terrorism. With us is Peter Bergen, fellow at the New America Foundation in Washington, D.C., and author of Holy War, Inc., Inside the Secret World of Bin Laden. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Morning, Amy.
So, Peter, you tend to be generally skeptical of these homegrown terror cases, but you think this case is different. Can you explain?
Well, a lot of the cases that we've seen over the last several years since 9/11 have been informant-driven. So there's always the question of, is somebody being entrapped? Often the cases have revolved around people talking about acts of terrorism, not really doing anything. But we've seen a number of cases in the last year or so where, you know, I think the bar is higher. The cases in Minnesota, for instance, of the group of Somali Americans who went to fight with a sort of quasi Al Qaeda like group in Somalia. One of the Americans involved actually committed suicide in a suicide attack, the first time ever an American has done that. A case recently in Arkansas, in Little Rock, where a African-American convert to Islam traveled to Yemen, seemed to get more radicalized there, and then shot up and killed an American soldier at an Army recruiting station in Little Rock, Arkansas. And the recent case in Long Island, where a guy from Long Island goes out to Pakistan, joins an Al-Qaeda training camp in 2008, volunteers for a suicide mission, actually partakes in a operation against an American base in Afghanistan. And now this case doesn't quite amount to those others yet, from what we know about it, but one of the conspirators whose name has been redacted in the indictment traveled to Pakistan recently, apparently for training. This group had assembled a very large number of weapons. Now, that might be pretty routine for North Carolina, as you sort of already indicated, John, but when you combine that with the kinds of views about jihad and martyrdom that appear in the indictment, and then you combine that with travel to places like Kosovo and Jordan and Israel, which may be routine tourist trips, as the wife of the main conspirator suggests, or it may be because they were seeking some form of jihad opportunity, as the Department of Justice suggests.
Right.
That will. Go ahead.
Sure. Peter, let's get into that. I'm sure a lot of people are asking, how does the boy next door end up with terrorists in his Rolodex? I mean, what connects someone from North Carolina to a shadowy group in Pakistan?
Well, you know, I think in this case it was a cell leader. Daniel Boyd was 20 years older than most of the conspirators, more or less. He'd actually fought in the jihad against the Soviets in Afghanistan with a group called Hezbi Islami, which is run by a guy called Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. At that time, a major recipient of U.S. aid, but now...
As you've reported, Peter, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar has received more than $1 billion of U.S. aid over the last 20, 30 years.
In the 80s, his group received at least $600 million, if you take the most conservative estimates. So... You know, this guy now, of course, is a close ally of the Taliban. He's fighting American and NATO soldiers in Afghanistan. He is a longtime ally of Osama bin Laden's. So Daniel Boyd, the ringleader of this group, fought with that group. It's a fairly radical group. Obviously, he would have received a fair amount of training and also battlefield experience.
Wow.
So I think the point that John is making, too, though, is that are we seeing still the reverberations, the blowback from the conflict in Afghanistan?
Yeah, we are. But, there's a sort of conspiracists and leftists would sort of say, well, you know, the World Trade Center attack was blowback from an operation gone awry in Afghanistan. I think that's a leap. The CIA didn't fund or train people like Gulbuddin Hekmatyar or Daniel Boyd. The money went through the Pakistanis,
right,
who unfortunately made their own choices about where the money went.
Well, the two takeaways here I hear, Peter, and I think Amy's gotten to it as well, is number one, do the feds have evidence that the Pakistanis or active terrorist groups in the region, in the Middle East, actually thought these guys had credibility and might have signed them up for something? That's like takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is maybe even more disturbing. Is there an emerging pattern in the United States of homegrown, home passionately sort of motivated jihadists that we're going to be seeing popping up everywhere from North Carolina to Minnesota, right?
Well, there is a sort of mini wavelet right now. Does it make a constellation? I'm not sure. Does it make something of a pattern? Perhaps. And certainly because American Muslims tend to be better educated than most Americans on average, better, have higher incomes, tend not to be living in ghettos, very different situation than what you see in Europe. I mean, I and many others have thought that the United States would be somewhat insulated from this phenomenon. But when you have several cases like these all popping up in the same year, you have to ask yourself the question, is that really the case? I mean, is there a possibility of a homegrown radical movement in the United States? And these four cases we've discussed, may amount to something more than just isolated incidents.
Thank you, Peter. It's scary stuff. Thank you for joining us this morning. You were listening to Peter Bergen, fellow at the New America Foundation, Washington, D.C., and author of Holy War, Inc., inside the secret world of Bin Laden. Well,
it's not just people in North Carolina that are asking those questions this morning. That's what we're all asking.
Indeed.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.